We present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from Exchange and Mart, read by Alan Smith.
Camping toilet used once, £8. Stool, £2.
Our thanks to James Broadbridge in Devon for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Mark Steele and comedian Ellie Taylor. And opposite them on my left, Aisha Hazarika and Andy Zaltzman. Mark, who's decided to stand up for what they believe in?
I suspect that this is a Euro elections thing, and the Brexit Party that believes that there shouldn't be such elections are, of course, the first people to be out campaigning, and marvellously, they keep coming up with these new candidates that they reveal, and the one that they've come up with this week is Anne Widdecombe. I think the Brexit Party is like Channel 5 when they have one of these new reality shows, and bit by bit they reveal all their contestants, and it's Anne Widdecombe, and over the weekend we'll have Timmy Mallet and Jimmy Greaves and the woman who put a cat in a wheelie bin. And that'll be their candidates. And all of this is it's just brilliant now, because it's such chaos that it's just become funny now, and people are going, oh, we're supposed to have left, and now they've got this extra 6 months, and how has this happened? But it's been because, like, the politicians have been like students. But you know when students go, oh, it's not fair, I've got this 10,000-word essay to hand in tomorrow morning. You go, oh, that's a bit much. When did they give you that to do? 3 years ago in June. Done it, and it's just hilarious, and people got really angry about 6 months ago, and now everyone's just thinking it's funny, because you don't know what chaos we'll get out of here, and we'll find out that they've agreed to make us a village in Poland, or they'll have agreed to Feline Plus, we're only allowed into Europe through a giant flap and we all have to crap in a tray. People just find it funny because you put on the news and there's another one of them votes, and nothing would surprise you if all the MPs were naked and one of them was in a canoe and Jacob Rees-Mogg was on a llama that was wearing a monocle, and there's they were all firing trifles at each other and the speaker was going, the jellies have it, the jellies have it. Nothing would surprise you. It's just madder and madder and more hilarious. And up until a few weeks ago, people were going, oh no, Theresa May, it's a hard job, it's very difficult. But now people go, no, the reason she's still there is not because she's stoic, it's because she's one of these appalling people who just can't understand that no one likes her. And there was a poll that said that 90% of the country thinks that these talks have been a humiliation for the country. Oh, and that says something so important, which is that 10% of the country's mental. What do you need to be a national humiliation? And then people go, well, we'll get through it. We got through the Blitz. We didn't vote for the Blitz, did we? Is that the answer, Mark? Yeah.
Well, you certainly seem exercised by this. How do you feel about it, Ellie? Do you think we're going in the right direction?
I think the new candidate's quite interesting, like the Rees-Mogg sister. She's a fun little appearance.
Oh, what's her name?
Annunciata. Cool. It could be anything. It'll be just a quadrisyllabic thing that begins with an A and sounds like it should be chanted. She's stood twice before. She's tried to be a Conservative MP. That hasn't worked.
Yeah.
Sadly. And this is what she's been reduced to.
And apparently David Cameron said when she tried to stand as a Tory MP that she should change her name to Nancy Mogg. To be more of the people. Still didn't work, did it?
Crikey. Andy, I bet you're very excited about this. I know you're largely pro-democracy.
I love democracy. I was just reading some breaking news before we came on. It was a compromise that's just been suggested, in fact, by Farage and Annunciata Rees-Mogg. Quite a nice compromise, actually, where they've said that they will allow all 27 EU member states to join the United Kingdom.
Aisha?
Well, I mean, it's been baffling to see everybody sort of swapping around with their politics. You've got Rachel Johnson, who's gone to the New Independent group. You've got Anne Widdecombe, who's gone to the Brexit group. It's like, so everyone's swapping. It's like the most confusing political orgy in the history of time. And I'm
How much research
now,
have you done for that?
A lot of research. Public scenes I can do. But Anne Widdecombe is 71, and I understand she'll be heading up the youth wing of the Brexit party. And as Ellie was saying, I'm loving all the sisters. I mean, I'm a feminist. I want to see more sisters in politics. This is not quite how I expected it.
It's very nearly reached the point where, as a nation, we are going to have to reactivate Des Lynam. Just to calm everyone down.
This is the announcement of candidates for the European elections, including the new parties Change UK and the Brexit Party. Of course, with Brexit still in the balance, it's not 100% certain that we will even get to the ballot stage. So, in a sense, these are Schrodinger's elections. They might go ahead, they might not, but whatever happens, there is a dead cat somewhere, and you can probably vote for it. Anne Widdecombe is making a return to politics, standing for the Brexit Party. We don't know how Nigel Farage managed to talk her round, but the rumour around Plymouth Docks is if you can drink 12 pints and still beat her in an arm wrestle, she'll hear you out. 2 points to Mark. Ellie, who's been schooling MPs on climate change?
So this is Greta Thunberg, the depressingly impressive 16-year-old Swedish climate campaigner. She was over in the UK this week, and she was here to meet MPs to address the Extinction Rebellion protesters, but primarily to make parents of British teenagers look at their children and just think, what is the point of you? She really is a very astounding young woman. She's incited an international climate change movement. She's met the Pope and she's been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. I just keep thinking, when I was 16, my greatest achievement was the Year 11 RE Award and a negative pregnancy test. Those two, they were separate events, by the way. Thunberg told MPs on Tuesday that the deciding factor for every new economic development must be the resulting carbon footprint. So she urged everyone, whenever you make a decision, just to run this question through your head, which is, how will this decision affect the emissions curve? Admittedly, not as catchy as what would Jesus do, but...
Some people had a go, like, there were complaints about it, weren't there? All the sort of usual people who would complain.
Yeah.
Well, Jeremy Corbyn's brother, of course, he criticised her. He's a climate change denier, yeah, isn't he, Piers?
It's something to do with the weather, isn't he?
He denies that there's any climate change. He's to do with the weather in that sense. What do you think?
And it was Toby Young, he had a go at her as well. He posted a Guido Fawkes article criticising her for being a privileged daughter of a Swedish Eurovision star. Yeah, because her mum is Melina Ernman, who represented Sweden in the 2009 final. Like, what an absolute babe. I think what he's trying to suggest is that 16-year-old Greta is a member of the elite and therefore not someone we should listen to. That's what Toby Young said. do you know Toby Young, the man who failed to get into Oxford until his father, Lord Young, made a few phone calls? That's it. Toby Young, the one who hates privileged children.
Andy.
Well, another article criticising her was on Spiked, who said, anyone who doubts that the Green Movement is morphing into a millenarian cult, which I think is a cult with particularly nicely made hats. Anyone who doubts the Green Movement is morphing into a millenarian cult should take a close look at Greta Thunberg. This poor young woman increasingly looks and sounds like a cult member. That is true of all teenagers. The monotone voice, ditto. Also, we don't know, a monotone voice isn't necessarily a sign of someone who's becoming a cult member. It could just be the sound of someone who dreams of being a snooker referee. Now, it's a curious cult as well. Well, I mean, one of the defining features of cults has always tended to be that they are not generally supported by thousands and thousands of peer-reviewed scientific papers. Also, I mean, what you have to bear in mind, I mean, is the environmentally driven apocalyptic end of the world actually such a bad thing? Hear me out. We judge things economically these days, and we are a loss-making planet right now. And I think to just write the whole thing off might might make sound shareholder sense.
This is 16-year-old schoolgirl and climate change activist Greta Thunberg, who this week has spoken to a group of MPs at Parliament. As an articulate teenager who's rallied whole nations to her cause, many have compared Greta Thunberg to Joan of Arc, although it should be remembered that in the end, Joan of Arc's contribution to climate change wasn't exactly positive. As if we needed more proof that the planet is doomed, David Attenborough has made another bleakly beautiful series about lovely animals with not long left for this world. I imagine we're only a year away from him holding a pistol to a polar bear's head and glaring into the camera for an hour straight. 2 points to Ellie. Andy, who might not feel the benefit of growing older?
Oh, everyone in the world, now.
Very good. 2 points.
Butterflies?
Keep guessing.
Well, is it old people?
In a sense.
Right. There's this report that's come from the Committee for Intergenerational Fairness, which has suggested that some of the benefits currently given to pensioners should be reallocated to young people as some kind of, an apology for completely ruining their world. It's a lovely gesture, isn't it? And so things like free stair lifts for teenagers. But I don't think it should stop there. I think we need to reallocate retirements to the middle-aged. It's wasted on the old. I think really if we had retirement from the age of... And I'm 44, so maybe from the age of 45, for 20 years, when you're still young enough and active enough to truly appreciate not having to do anything, that would be far better. Education is also wasted on children. who have very short attention spans and easily distracted with screens. So they make also a very good workforce, as the Victorians, of course, knew only too well.
There's no holes in this argument, is there? I mean...
be the most idiotic thing that's been put through in Britain in recent years, would it?
What would be different about your life if you retired? Anything?
Ooh.
You could go and watch some cricket for a change.
Oh, no, literally nothing.
I was actually at the cricket in Canterbury last year when the announcement, it was so magnificent. It's the only place I can still go where I'm half the average age. And there was an announcement in the afternoon that over the tannoy it said, and don't forget that we are pleased to announce that the sponsors for today's cricket are whatever the company's name was, Funeral Direct. And I thought, that is targeting your audience. Given that there's 73 people here and 64 of them won't see the tea interval.
Does anyone think this sounds a little unfair? I mean, presumably, not least, it's about being told that something's going to happen for a long time. Think, well, I'm going to look forward to being retired and there'll be certain benefits. And you might, for instance, budget for the fact that there's certain outlay that you wouldn't have to make.
It's a bit like being an older woman pensioner, actually. I think kind of pitching the old against the young is like quite... divisive. And sometimes there is this thing that everyone gets really upset about, kind of TV licenses for like older people. And I mean, look, when you're old, you're just going to want to sit at home and watch telly anyway. I think there is a bit of a sort of, why does it have to be a choice between those two? Why not take some more money from really wealthy people? And then we can help the old people and help young people. How's that for a radical idea?
Well, I mean, you look at the economics of it. There was a government report a few years ago now that broke down exactly what everyone's tax was spent on. It was the idea that they were going to basically send thank you letters saying where all your money has been spent. And the biggest single expense was pensions. So if you're earning £25,000 a year, paying about £6,000 in tax, £803 of your tax would go on pensions. The EU was costing you £28 a year. So where is the campaign to fire old people into space in special money-saving Codger rockets? That's what I want to know. And if we did that, we wouldn't need a double-decker bus to lie to people about how much money we could give back to the NHS. We'd need a jumbo jet stacked on top of an oil tanker. £10 billion a week, that would be, we can give back to the NHS if we fire all pensioners into space. And if you really want to exaggerate that figure for political gain, that is £10 trillion a week.
This is the latest from the House of Lords Select Committee on Intergenerational Fairness, who say that benefits for older people should be replaced with support for the young. Many pensioner households are now, on average, better off than their working counterparts, although it's worth remembering that much of this wealth is tied up in illiquid assets like property and unspeakably hideous ornaments.
Having a go at the monarchy again, Owen.
At the end of the day, I think we need to do a little bit more respect for the elderly. You have to remember this is the generation that didn't fight in the war, but very much act as if they did. The director of the International Longevity Centre said, "Today's young are tomorrow's older people," before adding, "and yesterday's babies are tonight's sacrifice to the time gods. I am never going to die."
If I had a pound for every time I've heard someone say that.
2 points to Andy.
And at the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Ellie have 4, and so too do Aisha and Andy.
We start round two with a cutting from the Times.
Lap dancing clubs are closing down across the UK, encouraging a race to the bottom.
Our thanks to Anne Gilchrist for sending that in. Aisha, who's worried someone will be peeking at our information?
Well, this is about a Chinese tech company, Huawei, and it's been leaked that the Prime Minister is considering giving them a major role in developing 5G in this country. The company is owned by the Chinese government and there's massive security concerns. But the really important thing about this story is how you pronounce the name of the company. It is a serious issue because you have to take government security seriously, and loads of people are very, very worried about this company and all the security stuff. But with leaks as well, like, so when you go into number 10 for cabinet meetings, you are meant to leave your phone at the reception so you don't leak anything or tweet anything. But it's a bit like line of duty because everyone takes a burner phone in with them. And what always happens is the cabinet gets a real ticking off from the Prime Minister saying, "Nothing from this meeting must leak." And then within 27 seconds, they've texted it and it's on Twitter to some lobby journalist. So the leak inquiry is going to be very, very interesting.
But that must be hard to do without... Doesn't like the Prime Minister go, "Gove, what are you doing?" Doesn't that? Can't they see?
They sort of surreptitiously sort of do it kind of under the table.
If everyone's got their hands under the table at once, she doesn't know who's doing what.
It's like they're trying to find the leak.
Do they all hum and every time she looks up, all stop? Who's doing that? More Prime Minister.
But the thing about this is that why it's so serious is because Theresa May reportedly gave the deal her support, even though she was strongly advised not to, on national security grounds, by experts. And it's hard to believe it. It's hard to believe that our Prime Minister ploughed ahead, regardless, with her stupid idea.
What I want to know is, if the Chinese are sort of institutionally snooping on all our conversations... Well, I mean, what is it worth it? Who's having to sit through and listen to all that?
That's
percentages.
Isn't it?
I mean, it must be. Well, it's just. I mean, when I was in five, you're really. Oh God. Well, when a mate of mine used to work at Thames House, what you'd get there'd be this. Basically, you're panning for gold, so there's a very rare percentage of it. So if you listen to sort of 100,000 hours of phone conversations, then, you know, if you get one really useful minute, it's worth it. Right. It's a bit like a fielder standing there in the outfield for 4 days, and then suddenly a catch comes towards him and he takes it, Andy.
I fully understand it now, Miles. Initially, 4G is pretty quick, isn't it?
I don't really mind all the Chinese snooping. If they can get me a better reception in central London, then I'm happy. Yeah. I'm just happy to go with
that's
it.
That's what I keep thinking. I'm like, if I can download Flog It more quickly, I'm in. Hack away. Plus, I also think surely there must be someone in the UK who can do this technology. Like, I think we're overlooking the obvious, Amstrad. Get Lord Sugar. Yeah, he'll get, you know, Team Horizon to sort it out. Easy.
According to leaked discussions from the National Security Council, the UK government is happy to allow Huawei equipment to form part of the UK's 5G network, despite worries about espionage. This is potentially the biggest upset to national security since Margaret Thatcher was informed too late in the day that at the other end of the Channel Tunnel, there would be French people.
5G will be crucial for autonomous vehicles to communicate with each other. Hey, mate, how's it going? Awful, my owner's just been to a carvery and simply won't stop for... Oh, hang on, I've just hit a pedestrian again. It was, in fact, a national security leak that revealed the government's decision in the first place. So let me be the first to extend a very warm ni hao to our new Chinese rulers, who, and let's be optimistic here, might be more competent. 2 points to Aisha. Andy, who thinks it's about maritime for a change?
Well, this is a very important story. About the Scottish Maritime Museum announcing that it is going to stop calling ships she and instead use gender-neutral language when referring to ships. They've had two things vandalised in their museum which have used female pronouns to describe a ship. And basically, on economic grounds, they can't afford to keep repairing the displays. They're just going to stop calling ships she. I mean, the problem is, I mean, it is very traditional. It's very, very hard to tell the sex of a ship. It's gender identity. They're like, in that respect, they're like rabbits or flies or trees or benches. And the reason for that, Miles, is that the ship's reproductive organs are generally hidden within the hull. And, of course, ships seldom display the kind of stereotypical gendered behaviour often found in humans. It's thought that's largely because they're not exposed to advertising on kids' TV channels during their early formative years. Often it's actually only after the ship has given birth to a baby ship, or to give it its technical biological name, a submarine, that you know if it's a mummy ship or a daddy ship. The submarine, of course, lives underwater for the first 5 to 7 years of its life cycle before turning either into a frigate or a whale. Sorry to get scientific on you. So it is... it's very... I mean, it is a possibility that all ships through history have just been female, and it's been... Which... And just imagine how much more aggressive and idiotic the history of shipping would have been had more ships been boy ships. When you compare it with human politics, obviously dominated by males, an absolute catalogue of testosterone-fuelled lunacy. So I think the more female ships we have, the calmer the high seas will be. We can build a better world.
Do you think this is as important as Andy thinks it is, Aisha? I mean, is this worry, this kind of behaviour of using gender nouns with any kind of floating object?
I think this is a really, really important new movement. We've had Me Too, now we've got C2. And the thing is, right, I just was like, I was kind of unsure about this story because I never really thought about it. I mean, why would you? Why would you? And then there's been lots of sort of old buffety admirables. Honestly, I really have lost my brain.
Old buffety admirables is a euphemism Prince Philip used for his testicles. The truth.
Mark, I know you get very exercised by this sort of thing.
Oh, I think it should apply to all other vehicles. Pedalos, are they she? Canoes? Everything on the water. Surely, you know. Trains, what are they?
Ooh. They're not ships.
But what gender are they, you know, in these days of gender fluidity?
I think it's probably up to the individual vehicles to decide.
I think it should be up to them to decide, and if a ship wants to identify as a train, then that's up to them.
Most trains are male, I think. Ivor the Engine and Thomas...
Oh, Thomas?
Thomas the Tank
Engine. Oh, sexist.
Oh, well,
that's right.
Don't shoot the messenger.
He's not the Reverend Audrey, despite protestations. This is a maritime museum in Scotland where, following vandalism of their signs in protest, it's decided to stop calling ships and boats she to make them gender neutral. The convention of using she and her is believed to have emerged in the 17th century as a means of saving embarrassment when you'd previously met a ship at a party and couldn't remember its name.
A spokesperson for the Scottish Maritime Museum confirmed that they would now be using gender-neutral terms to refer to ships, but admitted that it will be some years before it's possible to produce a fleet of submarines that don't just look like a big old bunch of willies.
That was a Vera Lynn song, wasn't it?
Shipping publication Lloyd's List has already abandoned centuries of seafaring tradition by calling all vessels it and by banning their controversial rush hour crush section. Saw you at 33 degrees north of Birkenhead with a very cheeky hull. Text me. 2 points to Andy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Mark.
Tracy Henderson sent this in. This is a recent quotation from an article on the British Association for Shooting and Conservation website. The BASC launched Take a Mate Shooting Month. We hope launching Take a Mate Shooting Month will encourage members to help show the nation and the political parties the benefits of shooting one person at a time.
Ellie.
A listener in Draycott, Somerset, called A. Vincent, saw this review of their local chip shop. The best fish and chips in the southwest. Every time I buy fish and chips here, I could happily die afterwards.
Aisha.
I've got one from Sally Taverner, and she's sent in a clipping from the Journal up in Newcastle about a local school. And it says, the overall picture for the once failing school looks promising, apart from its imminent closure.
Andy.
This is from Johnny Cahill in Cheltenham, who stumbled across this lunchtime booking. It reads as follows. We shall be bringing a dog to the pub who can be very nervous. If you could see just in a quiet corner where we can put the dog down.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Aisha and Andy have 8, but this week's winners are Mark and Ellie with 9. Before we leave you, here is a medical advertisement seen on Twitter and sent to us by Christopher Dunham.
Sunlight is important to human life. Vitamin D may help mitochondria function better. Sunlight is the natural source. Please expose yourself.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Mark Steele, Ellie Taylor, Aisha Hazarika and Andy Zaltzman. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Alan Smith. The chair's script was written by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, Benjamin Partridge and Mike Shepherd. With additional material by Catherine Brinkworth, Eleanor Morton and Kat Sadler. The producer was Victoria Lloyd and it was a BBC Studios production.